getting to know you.
Whoa.
Getting to know all about
whoa.
You. Getting to like
whoa.
You. Getting to hope you like
whoa.
Me.
Welcome to Getting to Know Woo. I'm Natasha Levenger, a professional intuitive reader, energy healer, and inner child healing expert. After being raised with extreme narcissism, I found talk therapy was helpful, but it wasn't until I found energy and inner child healing that I was able to break free of family patterns that cut me off from knowing and loving my true self. I'm passionate about dispelling the rhetoric that these kinds of tools are impractical and ineffective, and in this podcast, I will be sharing how actually beneficial and transformative they are. My husband and producer, Brett, will be joining me in conversation, and we will be welcoming experts along the way. I'm excited to have you here. What is absolutely happening, losers?
Hello, Wooligans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it feels like it's been a while, but I guess, did we skip another week? No, I think we're actually on schedule,
yeah. But it does feel like it's been 100 years.
Well, happy full moon, happy Passover, if you are into either of those things. We are here. So we have an interview on this show with Erica Robinson, which I will talk about later.
Yep.
But for now, I don't know. Is there anything first you want to say before? How are things doing? We haven't had a catch up. You know, I did another interview actually with Katie Rose, who is so great, and her podcast is called the Trauma to Transformation Podcast. Mm. I recommend it. I was talking to her about our podcast and how we don't really do a catch up anymore because I had done a survey and I had asked, do people not want this? Do people want this? And it was kind of split, but I feel like more people didn't.
I took it very personally.
You're kidding.
Yes.
I would have if I were you. But she was like, oh, I answered that survey and I said I want more of it. So I was like, why did I just err on the side of the people who don't want it? Because those people can skip. But we don't have to do a large catch up, but some fun things happening around here are, I can relate this to manifesting, and I'd like people to write in if to tell me their thoughts about, and they can email us at gettingtoknowwoo@gmail.com. But like one of the biggest ways I've ever manifested is when I have moved or like everything got shifted. Like I left a marriage,
right.
Not this one, or I moved. Those have been the like two biggest ways, like every time I move.
Yeah.
Anyway, this time we moved almost a year ago now, which is crazy. And things appeared that I didn't like intentionally manifest, but I just have wanted for a long time. And one of those was having like a group of friends like locally that are like
neighborhood-y.
Yeah. And also to have like game nights, because I love games and I was always, I historically have been the one to drive it, at least in the last 20 years, where I'm like, you know, okay, come over, everybody, let's do this. And then we always have a great time, but then no one else does it. Well, this time we happened in this neighborhood, one of our neighbors, and it's really their friends, although we can invite people to if we want, but it's all in the general neighborhood.
Right.
And, they just like created a game, a monthly game,
like a rotating hosting game night.
And it's so fun.
Yeah.
It's truly of my suburban dreams that I had envisioned as a child, unhappy child, isolated, lonely. But it's true. And now this is like what it's just like the kids go to the basement and we have so much fun. And this week we're going to be doing an 80s themed murder mystery.
So looking forward to it.
Oh my God. Brett got a wig.
Got a Yeah. Gotta do it.
I would like to find, obviously I've manifested other things in my life, but like I would like to find a less dramatic way to have all of my dreams come true.
Than having to uproot your life and put it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, because there have been also, we just love it here. And there's been other things. But anyway, so that happened. Now, did you want to say anything? No, you don't.
No.
You have no words.
I don't like to talk. Okay. No, I just, there's nothing interesting to anyone in this audience is going on in my life right now.
Okay. So what I wanted to talk about this week is I had been talking to my friend Sarah, this is now maybe, I don't know, a month ago. And she had brought up this idea of, or she was talking to me about like, well, I get lazy here, I get lazy there, that kind of thing. And I was like, I don't believe in laziness. So I wanted to talk about that because I think that a lot of people beat themselves up for being lazy.
Yeah.
I just actually realized this is weird that I had a one of my clients today, I was actually just talking to them about they had called themselves lazy. And I was like, it's wild. Like, they're not at all lazy. But anyway, so I, first of all, obvious, more, you know, in an obvious way, it's rooted in capitalism. Like, we have to go, go, go. And we're only worthy as humans by what we produce.
Yep.
But what I really think is like, I, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I've always respected my need for rest.
Yeah.
I guess because to me, it just feels so non-negotiable.
Yeah.
And also what I've really noticed, like I have a pace. I remember I wrote a newsletter a while ago and the subject was, oh, your peace is your pace.
Wow. That's a good one.
Yeah. Because it really, like, I do believe we all, and actually in human design, they talk about this a lot. Like, essentially, we all have a certain amount or a natural energy flow. So generators and manifesting generators generally have like a lot of energy. Like when they're focused on, when they're following their desires and doing their thing, it's like they can have endless energy. It's just endless. Yeah. But for other people, like you're a manifester, so you have a lot of energy to start things. But then then the idea is that if everyone else is in their design, like they'll pick up from where that goes. And you know. And what I really noticed, like with my work too, it's like if I have, like, for instance, when my class started, the first 3 weeks I had a lot of work because I was like simultaneous. I mean, I had the outline for what the class was, but then I had set aside time, you know, as the class started, to write all of the things and write all the PDF and do all of the work. And then I was also seeing clients at the same time, and it was just like, it was a lot. And then naturally the next week, I mean, I purposefully also blocked off time, but like I just noticed how, like, then the next week I needed downtime. Like, it was like I just was like not available. It was just shut down, but just like kind of like shut down to outside things. And I think that, and I'm friends with my pace, so I'm able to see it without judging it or shaming myself or whatever. That's something I don't shame myself for. I don't shame myself for hardly anything at this point, I guess. But the point is, like, I think a lot of people may call themselves lazy when actually they're just listening to what their pace is.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something else
about that? Well, I have a separate point about it. I don't need to interrupt you.
Well, yeah. And let's say you go through a time period where you don't want to do anything. Like, one, it could be depression, which is not laziness. Or two, it could just be the rhythm of your life in that time. And I mean, like, I see people who are like, well, I just went through like this enormous breakup and I, you know, or let's just leave it at that. I went through a breakup and now I'm just like, I don't have energy to do X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, because you're processing a breakup. And I know we want to like flag ourselves into, you know, is that the right word? Flag?
Like flagellate.
Is that what it is? Flagellate ourselves? Okay.
Like monks used to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Into being productive. And it's not to say you can't do anything, but like we seem, I think as a society, we have like set this expectation and this like line for ourselves of like, we have to constantly be at this certain level at yeah. all times. And that's just like nothing in nature works that way.
No.
And we don't work that way. But because of capitalism, it's ingrained in us that that's what we're supposed to do. And we each have different roles and we're supposed to be excellent at these specific roles. And,
yeah.
and if we're not, we're lazy or bad or what or stupid or whatever. And so, like, it's just very important. And I guess I hadn't realized in my mind that I actually really don't believe in laziness. I really, until I said it to her,
yeah.
but she kept calling herself lazy or like, I was like, what is that even?
I know that word.
I mean, like sometimes we'll see, okay, let's talk about children. I don't know. It doesn't have to be ours, but like they won't be doing the things around the house. We've heard this of teenagers.
Yeah.
You hear about from teenagers all the time. Okay, so in that case, first of all, teenagers do need more rest.
Right.
They're growing at rapid rates. And second of all, like, there's a difference between teaching children how to, like, take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And them being lazy. Like, so it is a skill to learn, like, okay, you've been raised your whole life being taken care of if you have parents who do that. And then and then you have to learn it. And, like, there's times when, you know, you don't feel like doing a particular chore or whatever. It doesn't make you lazy. It just means, yeah, you don't feel like doing it. And if right. why does that have to be...
Right, like a whole judgment. Character flaw
yeah, exactly.
instead of just this moment.
Yeah, I'm not interested in doing this task.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think that if it is a continual thing, like, you know, the trope of, like, the boyfriend who sits on the couch and, you know, doesn't do anything, it's like, well, that's a deeper issue.
Right.
That's probably right. a respect issue or, like, who knows, like maybe they're depressed or maybe like
yeah.
or maybe they are used to being waited on, so they need to be educated about what is a responsibility that goes so much deeper than laziness.
Yeah,
you know,
well, I think so many things get labeled as laziness, like for
yes.
myself, procrastination is a huge problem, and
yeah.
procrastination frequently gets labeled as laziness
yes.
too.
Exactly.
And I know for me, like with a later adult diagnosis of ADHD, understanding that that was like an inherent part of me.
Of your brain.
Of my yeah. brain chemistry or my, you know, whatever, the neurostructure.
Yeah.
It just, it gives you so much more capacity to be kind to yourself mm-hmm. and also to find things that work to counteract it when you need to, instead of just like trying to, you know, white yeah. knuckle through it or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel like rest gets labeled as laziness. Mm-hmm. Procrastination gets labeled as laziness.
Mm-hmm. And even just like things with food and exercise mm-hmm. often get labeled that way. Like everybody exercises differently. Like mm-hmm. everybody has different. First of all, we found out that one of our children has this thing called POTS,
mm-hmm.
which literally has a exercise intolerance in
yeah.
it, like
yep.
because yep. of how it affects the heart and all these things.
Yeah.
And they have a lower capacity for exercise that's, and they are
yeah.
not lazy.
And all kinds of physical activity.
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly. And yeah, so not under, actually, here's a good use of the word lazy. I think lazy, the definition is often used, it's a lazy way to describe
yeah.
what is underneath it.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Like a lot of these things that get labeled as laziness can also be trauma responses,
yes.
or like you said, they can be underlying mental health conditions,
mm-hmm.
none of which are going to be helped by
calling
stigmatizing
yourself.
Yeah. If someone is avoiding doing something, there is an underlying
that's
reason
right.
for it. There's an underlying need not being met.
Yeah. And calling yourself lazy doesn't help. I mean,
yeah.
I just do not believe in tough love anyway.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it can work short term, but it hardly ever works. It does not work long term.
Well, even then, like I mean, I don't know what the opposite of tough love would be. Soft love? That sounds weird. But like being compassionate and strict with yourself is, I think, what most people are like trying to accomplish with tough love. Like, come on, we just got to do it.
Yeah.
Or if I just have to do it or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's, none of the changes in my life, like that I am happy about, were accomplished by being hard on myself, which I did for a long time.
Yeah.
And like, instead acknowledging that there is something else happening and trying to figure out what it is and how to meet that need, it just is better.
Yeah. And, I mean, what happens when we're hard on ourselves too is we have strong protector inner child parts that are like, this is the way to do it. You're not going to get it done unless you're mean to yourself, unless I talk to you like this.
Yep.
And even that part of you needs to be like, whoa, okay. Like,
bro, good.
Yeah, bro, good. Let's chat. And like, you know, I know you're scared that we won't get things done otherwise, but there's a better long-term solution for this.
Yeah.
And looking at it kindly is just, in my opinion, always better.
I mean, also, like, if it is an underlying, like, inner child part, there's always something that they are afraid of, that they are trying to protect you from, which is often not even true anymore.
Yeah.
And so, like, interrogating that to find out what it is can be a great way to start. Mm-hmm. Quieting that critical voice.
Yeah. And helping them to have a better role.
Yeah.
And and the same is true for willpower. This is what I was starting to say. Like, if you are like, let's say you have goals of wanting to move your body more, then like, you know, finding ways to be friends with the kinds of exercise that you like, or so that you actually want to do it.
Yes.
There's just so much morality attached to capitalism.
Yep.
To like, to like, this is the way things are done so that you can make money.
Right. Yeah. Oh, well, and even just like that structure also like rooted in very like puritanical ethics of like, there are right and wrong ways to be a human.
Yes.
And almost all of them are like restrictive and, and unpleasant.
Yeah. And also misogyny, because it's like there, you know, there is healthy masculinity, and that is more of a yin. I always mix them up. That is the yin,
I don't remember which one is which.
Interesting. No, yin is the feminine, I'm pretty sure. Whichever it is, it's one of those two. And that is like, you know, it's more of a go, go, go kind of energy. Even that energy has its ebbs and flows. Nobody goes all the time.
Yeah.
But that more like receptive, feminine, real, you know, rest as a means, you know, it is as a means to grow. I mean, that is what resting is for, so that, you know, you can integrate and, there's so much that happens in the integration process, which can't happen while you have your foot on the pedal at the same time.
Yeah. I frequently think about something that Asha Frost said in our interview with her, because I have always identified with bears as like, as an animal.
Uh-huh.
And they have, you know, the perception of like the symbolism of strength and like power. They sleep for months at a time.
Yeah, yeah,
and like they have to, they prioritize rest. And like that, her reminding me of that fact about bears was like, it was, like I said, something I think about all the time.
Yeah. And the thing is, they don't prioritize it with their brains.
Right, right.
They just
right.
know, oh, my body needs this, and they don't second guess it.
Right.
They're like, okay. Goodbye, world. Yep. And then hello, world.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Yeah.
And
I'm assuming none of them shame themselves for it, but
we don't know.
That's kind of an adorable idea.
Adorably sad.
Well, yeah, but still adorable.
So I guess what we've come to learn here is treat yourself like a bear.
Yeah.
Go when you gotta
go. To sleep for months.
And go to sleep for months. That sounds good. And like cats, maybe. Okay, well, we are going to get to our interview in a moment, after which we'll do a card pull. But in the meantime, hey, if you like this podcast, please go ahead and rate and review it. We'd be so grateful. We appreciate you all Very so much. Also, you can subscribe to my Substack. I would love that. I send out emails every week, whether it's paid or free. Paid subscribers, I am starting to do I always give something every month. And also, they get 15% off my classes. And when you subscribe and you pay, no matter if it's monthly or yearly, you get the archives of everything from since I started it. So it's a great deal. And you can find it at natashalevenger.substack, I think.
Uh-huh. And also just natashalevenger.com/signup.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I really love writing my Substack.
Yeah.
And I'm also over there on the Tiki Talkies if you would like to watch videos.
That's also at Natasha Levenger, right?
That's correct. All right. So we are going to talk to Erica Robinson about her book, The Language of Lenormand, or however you say it. You'll hear in the interview that she says
you can says say it however you want.
That's right. And Lenormand, for those who don't know, you'll hear all about what it is, but it's a kind of oracle deck. Okay. So I'm going to read from her bio. And she says, I'm Erica. Although I'm not, but this is what she says. Harvard educated and with a Master's of Divinity degree, I studied Lenormand as I might study anything. I read and wrote and memorized and practiced, but Lenormand taught me that when the bearing down part of learning is done, the next level of understanding is arrived at with a letting go, a willingness to see with an internal gaze. Once I cultivated this gaze, the wisdom of the universe opened up to me. Lenormand became my frankest friend, my wisest counselor, my most patient teacher. I've been reading Lenormand professionally, both in person and virtually, for years now. Every opportunity is a joy. And here is her interview with us.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very excited to talk to you about this.
Well, first, let's tell them the name of her book.
Yeah.
And before we started, we asked you, how do you pronounce Lenormand? Maybe we should have done this on mic.
Well, it's French. So in France, they would say Lenormand, but we're not in France.
Yeah.
So we are allowed to say it however it comes out of our mouth. So most people will say Lenormand or Lenormand, whatever it looks like, just spell it up, you know, sound it up phonetically and you'll be correct.
Okay, great. All right.
So the book is called The Language of Lenormand, A Practical Guide for Everyday Divining. And
Divination.
Sorry. I had an ellipsis there. I guessed at the rest of the the rest of the title.
As you were listening to it.
Well, yeah. So let's just start, I guess, with the very basics for it, because I assume many of our listeners like myself. Well, maybe I shouldn't assume they're like myself, but I had not heard of it before. And the intro that you gave was really great. Do you have a short introduction to it doesn't even have to be
be short. This is a podcast. Absolutely. Take your time.
So Lenormand is traditionally it's a 36 card deck. The images on the cards are archetypal. So a house, a book, a woman, a tree, a dog, all images that you would recognize and that have some resonance with.
Mm-hmm.
And they are read not individually, the way you would read a tarot, a single card, right? Not with Lenormand. With Lenormand is a group activity.
Teams. Oh, I love that.
So Lenormand cards work with each other. So it's just in the same way that spoken or written language functions, right? So the example I always give,
like that.
If you say the word dog, right? You all get an idea of what I mean when I say dog, right? Something with four legs, a tail, some kind of coat, a snout, dog. Mm-hmm. But it's generic, but it's not until I attach other words to it that dog comes alive. So I say, the fluffy white dog was wagging its tail so hard that its whole back end moved and it licked me like I was an ice cream cone. All right, that's one image.
Wow.
Or if I said, the big black dog with the fangs that were dripping with saliva leapt at my throat. Well, that's a very different thing. So it's the same word, dog, But it only comes to life when you attach other words to it. Lenormand is that way. So, for example, a bear is a bear is a bear. And in Lenormand, a bear can have lots of different meanings, but you don't know what meaning to ascribe to it until you see the other cards in the line or the spread, and that will help you. So Lenormand cards create their words, and they create sentences, which create paragraphs, which create story. Mm. Each card has also a number attached. I went to China at one point, and I thought, you know, I want to be able to read when I'm in China, but I'm going to be all over China by myself. So I don't want to have my cards confiscated. So what can I do? So I took a set of 3x5 note cards and I just numbered each card 1 through 36. And I was able to do Lenormand readings because
knew
the number that corresponded to the image.
And you said in the book that some Lenormand readers ascribe meaning to how the card comes out of the deck, but you do not. Is that correct? Like the reason you're able to use the numbers is because it doesn't matter if it's upside down. If it's
You don't read reversals. It's just you see a picture of a tree and you think, okay, tree. That's it.
Yeah.
Now I will say that this began as a card game. Late 1700s, early 1800s. It's a system that I would say is as much French as it is German. And it was named after this woman. Her name was Madame de Lenormand, right? She was a famous seer and medium of her time. Oh. She never used these cards.
What do you mean?
Why is her name attached?
Yeah.
Whoever invented it said to themselves, we recognize a good marketing idea when we see one.
Oh my God.
They slapped her name on it.
Oh my God.
And everybody was like, oh, Lenormand, it must be good. And that's how it started.
Wow. That was before people could maybe sue each other.
Like trademark their name.
Our trademark or copyright.
Exactly.
Oh, that's terrible, actually.
Well, this question might be jumping ahead a little bit, but it's something that comes up for me in other systems and something that you mentioned in the book. I noticed that some of the cards have meanings attached that clearly were not meanings that could have been around in the 1700s or 1800s, right? Like, I think you said the stars mean the internet, for example.
Yes. Yeah.
And there was another one for metastasization.
That's stars.
That's also the stars.
Also, yes.
Yeah. So I'm curious, how do new meanings find their way into like quote unquote official interpretation?
I love that question. I think it makes the case for why Lenormand is a language. Mm. So for example, at one time people spoke Latin.
Right.
Nobody speaks Latin anymore. Why? Because Latin sort of stayed static. Now, in some way it stayed static, in other ways it didn't. For example, Spanish and Italian and French all have these Latinate roots, right? Mm-hmm. So I make the case here that language morphs over time. I'll give you another example. We'll start with Latin. In Latin, if you made a mistake or you were going to the priest to confess your sin, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, right? And it means my fault, my own fault, my own most grievous fault. Okay. That morphed in English to I'm sorry. And then it morphed again. I taught school for 30 years. Kids would say, oh, miss, my bad. My bad, my fault, my fault, mea culpa. It's a beautiful thing. So language, if it's going to survive, grows and morphs and takes into account the zeitgeist, right?
And sometimes we hate that, though.
Well, you know what? You guys are both too young, but there's an American Express commercial from the olden days, and the tagline was, there's a card for that.
No, we are Everyone not too young for that.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
So I always say that about Lenormand. There's a card for that. So let's say somebody
that's
asks
hilarious.
A question, right? And it's a health reading, and it's cancer, right? Well, I mean, Is there a card for Cancer? No. So again, being someone who's into language, I think about the different cards and I think, well, stars would be like, for example, a rash, something that spreads. And then I think spreads, and then I think metastatic cancer, right? Stars are also, they connect things. They're the universe. So why would it not be the worldwide web? Now, I'm not saying that, there are definitely rules attached to Lenormand that you have to learn. There are certain traditional meanings. But once you learn those meanings, the more you work with the cards, the more the meanings can morph. So I'll give you an example. There's a card in the deck. It's called Birds. According to the Germans, birds means sorrow. But for me, it's the other meaning. It's the French meaning, which is communication and chattering, and it can be gossip, it can be meetings, any kind of oral communication. Well, when you're doing a reading, how do you know? So generally, 9 times out of 10, that latter meaning is the meaning for me. But 1 time out of 10, I'll do a reading and I'll look at the other cards and I'm like, that there is no way that that word means meetings or talking. So could it be sorrow? Then the penny drops and it's sorrow. But I'll give you another example, the card mice. Now, mice eat away at things. They nibble. So it is a card for anxiety, worry, nerves. It's also a card for disease, dirt, because I mean, they are vermin. No offense. They are.
No offense.
But something would happen in my readings occasionally, and I thought, I really need to pay attention to this. So occasionally, I would see no negative way that I could construe that card. And then something came into my mind, and I thought, Disney. And I thought of Cinderella. Now, if you remember Cinderella, the Disney cartoon, there were some very bad-tempered mice in the beginning of that cartoon. I mean, they're bumping into each other, they're argumentative, they're just, ugh. And then they get a task. It's a very important task. And the task is to help create a beautiful experience for Cinderella. So when she goes to the ball, and all of a sudden, all of their freneticism and anxiety and stress gets channeled into this beautiful purpose. So sometimes mice can be excitement.
Yeah,
Right?
well, no,
Love
they
that.
say that nervousness and excitement feel the same in the body.
Exactly. So you have to, as a reader, you have to say, is this a good witch or a bad witch? Is this anxiety or is this anticipation, right? Other cards will indicate which one it is.
Now, I actually that dovetails into another question that I had. It seems like I mean, I think you've said this explicitly, but I'm just checking my understanding that Lenormand would be considered a word order language. Like it matters what order the cards come in, not just what they are next to, but how they
Sure.
are next to the others. Is that true?
Yes, because let's say trying to think of a good okay. Let's say we have, I don't know, the cross and the stork. Now the stork is positive change. The cross tends to mean some kind of pain. Well, the word order will make a difference. Does the pain come before or after? Does the positive change come before or after? So yeah, word order matters. But remember, remember I talked about a second ago the idea of just being fluid and letting meanings come to you. Think about poets like E.E. Cummings. E.E. Cummings, he knew what capitalization was, right? He chose not to use it on purpose. It wasn't taught it. It was for effect. Emily Dickinson, another example. She knew what iambic pentameter was. She was taught that. She learned that. But for artistic reasons, she chose to deviate from that. So my entreaty always to people who learn Lenormand is learn the rules first.
Yeah, that's true, I think, with tarot as well.
Well, I, you know what? You'll find all kinds of camps of tarot readers. I read tarot before Lenormand,
Oh,
and
okay.
so there are some people who will say they don't know the rules at all of tarot, and they'll say, "Oh, I just read intuitively," and they do, and that's one layer of meaning. My entreaty is learn the rules, so then you can read in a very workmanlike way,
Yeah,
see
that makes
on
a
a
lot of sense.
run, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once you make the cards your own and you listen to what you're being given, you can start reading like Shakespeare or Toni Morrison,
Yeah.
your own poetic self, right? And
Yeah.
words are story, and that's essentially what we're doing when people come to us for readings, is we're telling them a story that their own higher self has told to us.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. That is one of the things I loved most in reading this book is right at the beginning that you empower the reader, that it's not like you've got a strict set of rules, you better get working. There is that, but also I'm going to teach it to you in an easy way, and you are a part of this. Like your information is a part of how you are going to read this always. I really liked that.
Well, I think it's, one of the things that differentiates me from a lot of the Europeans who read it. And Europeans are very respectful of my work, which I'm very gratified by. But they have a very sort of by the a sense of how to read Lenormand. So, for example, they thought that Lenormand was a terrific oracle to help you find your keys if you lost, or to predict whether you're going to have good weather for an outside party. They did not realize that Lenormand had the depth that I've shown them that it has. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think that I talk a lot about my relationship with the client, or the cards' relationship to the client, et cetera, as sort of, it's a group activity, just like the cards are themselves. You contract with me to do a reading. That means you're giving me permission to access the knowledge of your higher self. Now, physics tells us that the past, the present, and the future all happen at the same time. That's crazy, but apparently it's true. But as human beings, right, that's hard to get your head wrapped around. So what I do is, if somebody contracts with me, they ask me a question, or they ask me, show me what the cards say, whatever. The metaphor I use is that I go to the vault of their higher self's wisdom. And what's in there? The past, the present, and the future. And I tap into the right vault because they've given me their permission. So they're already, connected to this.
On board, yeah.
And yeah, now the Greeks have two words for time. Chronos, right? Time on the clock, time on the watch, time on the calendar. That's the time that we operate in. But they have another word, kairos. And kairos, of course, is the fullness of time. It includes chronos, but it's more. So I go to the land of kairos, get the information from their higher self, come back down, and lay out what I see through the cards. The cards are the translator, the mitigating tool that help me explain in chronos language what I got from Kairos. So I have a spread that I created, and it's very popular. I think it's 23 card spread. And I'll tell you how I got to it in a minute. But what I love about it is that the first two lines of it are backstory, things that the client already knows. And so they'll say to me, sometimes they'll say, "Well, why are you telling me what I already know?" And I always laugh. I'm like, "Okay, you already know it.
Right, but I didn't.
I didn't." That I went to that vault and you gave me that information. And it's wonderful because immediately you get buy-in from the client because they realize that they are participants in this magic that's happening. So it's beautiful. Now, why did I devise the spread? So I came to Lenormand about 15 years ago. I was already reading tarot, and I didn't start reading tarot until 15 years ago. My husband had unexpectedly died.
I'm
And
sorry.
I had a 15-year-old teenager,
Oh
and
my
I was a
gosh.
teacher, and he died in October. So, it's the beginning of the school year for
Oh
her.
my gosh.
And so I wanted to make everybody comfortable. I wanted everything to be normal. So I wrote the faculty a letter saying, you know, please treat us both normally. And, you know, these things happen and everyone will pass this way, you know, very Yoda-like. But I still, I mean, I had all these concerns, like, how was I going to pay the mortgage on the house? Right. How was I going to send this girl to college? You know, a sewer bill? I didn't even know there was such a thing as a sewer. I thought you flushed the toilet and that was it. So there were all of these things. And I didn't want to turn any of my friends into that 3 a.m. friend that you call, you know, because you're having a panic attack, right?
Yeah, well,
so I thought,
sometimes you need those.
But you can be your own 3 a.m. friend with Lenormand. So with Lenormand, I could ask the same question 10 times. You know what they'll do? Lenormand will tell you the same thing they told you nine times already, but each time they say it with different words, different combinations of cards until something suddenly clicks. You know how like your mother says, I don't know, would you jump off the Empire State Building if somebody told, you know, you don't listen, like you listen with half an ear to your mother, but if your best friend says it, or your favorite aunt says it, or your favorite teacher says it, oh, well, all of a sudden it's holy writ. Right? Lenormand is like that. They will tell you things in however many ways you need to hear it until you get it. So it was just a kind, gentle, direct, and clear friend. And that's what I want people to come to when they come to my book and they start reading for themselves.
Yeah, I'm glad you had that support. That's good. And you said do we have enough time to do a little reading with your deck?
Sure.
Okay.
So this is the cover of my deck.
It's beautiful. I love that.
One of the cards in the deck is called the bouquet, and it is actually this card.
So I love that. It's gorgeous. And where can you get your deck? Anywhere?
So no, it's through LaPanthereStudio.com. LaPanthereStudio.
Okay, we'll put that in the show notes.
Thank you.
So how is it similar to a tarot reading where
here's how it works.
Okay.
So Lenormand does love a good question.
Okay.
But sometimes people will come to me because they are, you know, they've never had a Lenormand reading in their life and they don't know what to ask. And that's fine. So I can pull five cards and let spirit identify what the issue is.
Oh, okay.
But if you have a specific area, I could, there's a card for that. And I would pull that card as central and then pull some cards around it.
Brett, I think you should ask about next steps.
Okay.
If you want to.
Well, I am contemplating and have been for a while, but keep getting stuck a career change. And I'm not sure which direction to go.
All right. So there's a card for that. The card for career in Lenormand is the moon. The moon is other things as well, but career is one of those things. So what I'm going to do is just cut the deck into three. I shuffled before I came with the intention that one of you would ask. And so I'm just going to flip the deck, the cards one by one until I get to the card that we're looking for. And it's the moon.
Okay. Oh, okay. So you're going to specifically look for the moon.
Yes. So I look for the moon. So you can imagine that I flipped over cards, right? So I have one stack of cards that's flipped over and I have the rest of them that are not flipped over.
Okay.
So this is my moon card. And what I love about it is that it is, on the card also is the flower Datura. And Datura is a flower that only blooms under moonlight. Isn't that
cool? Beautiful.
I put that in the middle.
So to start your... So do you always do that? If someone asks like a question about love, do you pick
I will look for the heart.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So you actually, this was subject. A question I had about how you use the significator.
Right. So that any card can be a significator. Right?
But you start because the question that I had was like, what if it doesn't come up? But this, you're saying that you don't start the reading until it comes up,
yes,
and then the cards that come next.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Now, again, I could have done it a different way. I could have just said, let me pull five cards and see what means. But I didn't do that. So we have the moon in the middle. And then I'm taking from the cards that I already turned over, I'm taking one and putting it to the left, and then the other and putting that to the left. So now I have three cards. And then I have cards that I didn't turn over yet. So I'm going to just take whatever the next one was, and then whatever the next one was. Okay.
Okay.
So now I have my five cards. So I will show you what they are. We have the first card, which is the sun.
Mm. That's a nice one.
The next card is the tower. Mm. Well, you're going, you're thinking of the
tarot.
Tower.
Yeah, so you're right.
This is a very different tower. We'll talk about it in a minute. Mm-hmm. We have the moon, which is the card we were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
We have the book, and we have the stars. Okay. So the sun, this, you know, obviously you want something that's going to make you happy.
Mm.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Now we have the tower. Now the tower is an interesting card, especially in terms of career. Because on the one hand, the tower can stand for any institution, like, I don't know, a church, a bank, a school, etc. But it's also the card for, since we're talking about work, autonomy, which is working for yourself.
Mm.
Okay. Then we have moon. Now, then we have the book. Now, the book, even though books hold information, ironically, the book card is about things we don't know. As a rule, that's what it's about.
Mm.
Things we don't know, things that have yet to be discovered. And then we have the stars.
Mm.
Stars, generically speaking, it's the future.
Mm.
Right? So now there's a thing we do in Lenormand called mirroring. And that means looking at two cards together. I can't mirror every card, but I can mirror in this spread the sun and the stars.
Mm.
So whatever it is that you do, you want it to make you happy, and you also want it to be widely disseminated.
Mm.
But this is not like assembling widgets at a factory or anything. This is something that you want people to see. You want it out.
Mm.
So that interesting. That. And then we have the tower with the book. And it makes me feel like you're saying to yourself, yeah, but how do I do that? Like, how do I do that on my own? How do I, you know, I don't know how's that supposed to look?
Well, I also wonder, because he's been thinking about going back to school, and you said that was an institution.
It could be literally. Sometimes, you know, a book is a book is a book.
Yeah. And things he doesn't know yet.
By the way, going to school, a lot of people are in school online.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember. So one of the things that I would do is I would pull a clarifier or two on a book, because I think that, right? So we just pull it.
And do you just do that by, like, your intention is these are clarifying the book,
yes,
or is there a...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And so, interesting cards. So we have the bear.
Oh. He was a bear. Okay, go on.
The mice, and we have clouds.
Oh.
So let me just say this. It's very important that you know your own power. Because if you remind yourself, I accomplished this in that iteration, I accomplished this in this iteration, then you will be reminded. You know, if you go into the bank of your memories to remind yourself of your power, what that will effectively do will cause the mice to nibble away at the clouds. And clouds are doubts.
Mm.
Now, doubts are just thoughts, but thoughts can become things.
Mm.
So there's a way around that, which is, again, the bear.
Knowing your power.
I'm successful here, so I can be, I'm applying it in a different setting, a different context.
I love that. That's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's given me a lot. Yeah, I do. It's given me a given me some direction to put my thoughts in.
Well, you know, Henry Ford, who was a jerk in a lot of ways, let me just say. I mean, but you know, even a clock, even a broken clock is right twice
Right.
a day.
Twice a
He
day.
said, whether you tell yourself you can or you can't,
Right.
you're right.
Right.
Yep.
And that there should be a reminder to you of that. There's nothing either good or bad, says, I don't know whether it might have been Shakespeare, but thinking
Thinking
makes
makes
it
it
so.
so. Yeah, I love that line.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah,
thank you
that's
so much,
great.
Erica, for the reading and talking about your book.
Well,
So,
thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
yeah, we appreciate it. What were you going to say, Brett?
Well, I was just going to ask where people can find you
And
and
your
your
book.
book and your deck. Is it
Yeah,
all
so
at
the
La
book is,
Panthera?
no,
Okay.
La Panthera is for the deck. The book
Okay.
is everywhere and certainly on Amazon.
Okay.
It looks, like this, which I love the fact that the color sort of is common,
Yeah,
purple
that's
got
such a pretty holder for your deck.
Yeah. And then my website is Lenormand with Erica. .com.
And can people get readings with you?
Yeah, sure. I do
Oh,
read.
great.
Absolutely. I'll be having a cl putting a class up online, but
Oh,
information
fun.
about that will come in the summertime. So, but
Okay,
yeah.
great. Well, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that.
We sure did.
Okay, so speaking of decks, I don't have her deck, or I would actually, I don't know how to read it yet.
Yeah, we couldn't do the same kind of card pull.
But I do have a deck from friend of the show, ex co-host. Is that okay to say it that way?
Yeah.
Tess Whitehurst, and her new deck is called the Angel Magic Oracle, empowering guidance and divine love. So I'm gonna pick a card for us
It's
for the next fortnight. I love Tess's decks, I gotta say.
Yeah,
All
it
of
is
them.
beautifully illustrated.
Yeah, all of them are.
Yeah.
And the of course she writes the guidebook, so they're great. Okay, here we go.
Was that the one on top when you?
Yes.
That's wild.
I just shuffled. I looked at it and I was like, oh, I felt really drawn to it, but I was like, I'm gonna pick it. I pick a card, and there they are, Metatron.
Oh, that's my favorite archangel name that sounds like a mech from a 80s anime.
That's funny. Okay, Metatron says, I am always here to connect you with your eternal origin, the concentrated diamond light of creation. All you need do is ask. Consider the earth, now the sun, now the solar system. Now think of the spiraling galaxy in which the solar system is but a speck. Now expand your awareness to billions, trillions of such galaxies in an endless, endless, incomprehensible, endless expanse. Where I live is within all of this, but also beyond it, and the light of the divine unmanifest from which everything you hold in your awareness is born and to which it returns. I am your emissary from and your direct line to divine consciousness, the infinite central sun.
Wow.
While all angels are rays of divinity, aspects of the singular eternal consciousness, you might say that Metatron's light is the purest or most essential. He is like the taproot or the direct line to the all-encompassing wisdom of infinity. He generously infuses and reinforces our entire body and aura, as well as every molecule and cell, with the diamond-white double helix of divine DNA. Metatron reminds you that you are safe and all is well. All you need to do is refresh your awareness of your true infinite nature. All you need to do is remember who you are. What's crazy about this is this is why I call my class a spell of remembering. And we've been working in class with the chakra, how there is an internal part of the chakra that is already completely enlightened, like it's the most pure enlightened version of it, and you can call on that to in to I almost said infiltrate, to infuse the rest of your chakra and your system with that highest light. And we've been talking too about DNA lately, Is it you? Oh, it isn't maybe not you. Me. It was with Lisa. Never mind. But I was talking to her about that because I've been talking to my parallel self, and she was talking. Anyway, I don't have to involve her. But like my parallel self was showing me like DNA, like that our DNA already has this like enlightened version, like the complete version, version, not that what is complete mean anyway, because we're always growing, but like that we can call on that and let it infuse our DNA and let it infuse our bodies.
That's very interesting. I also find this interesting because I have been thinking about the Open Focus Mind, the book that we read, and one of the main tenets of that is contemplating being aware of space, of like the three dimensionality of the world. And that just resonated, that very beginning part of that description.
Like there's like we don't think about the space between like where you're sitting and the wall next to you,
right? Or but the space your body takes up.
Call on Metatron every day as part of your daily spiritual work to keep your crown chakra and direct line to spirit open and strong. Boy, this really is. I've had like a couple sessions today where that was called on. This is really, I think this is, I'm reading it now too, because it's supposed to be a theme. Like just how much peace there is if you can put, imagine a cord from your crown chakra at the top of your head to a big sun above your head, which it represents your highest knowing and also your guide, your highest guides and like source, and like feel light coming down from there to like, yeah, just to connect you to your, that's your highest knowing. And a lot of times we will take on other people's knowing, and doing that can help you connect back to it and feel it. Also invoke him before writing, painting, or engaging in any creative endeavor to let divine inspiration flow to you, through you, and out into the world. Sit comfortably and with your spine straight. Close your eyes and breathe deeply and steadily until you feel your mind and body relax. Invoke Metatron and imagine or sense a pillar of blinding white light connecting the crown of your head to the infinite white light of infinity and pure potentiality. Breathe and let this light bathe your mind, body, and aura, restructuring your thoughts and attuning you to the purest and most positive frequency of spirit. So, yeah, this is Angel Magic Aura. All righty. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Bye.